Welcome to Cultivating Hearts Radio Ministry. We're back in the studio with Carrie.
Hello.
And Taryn, myself, Sandy, and we have been discussing Luke 23 about the crucifixion. And last time, if you tuned in, we talked about Herod and Pilate. And our biggest focus, though, was on the glory of God and how he can control when he wants it to be seen. And also, it's our choice to see his glory. So, we want to choose that.
It is so important. Just so important, because we were examining how that glory that goes on a deeper level is willing to overlook someone's faults and willing to avoid strife.
Because when you overlook faults, you do avoid strife. I mean, when you think about it,
that's true.
You're not doing it, you're like this.
And Sandy, here's the deal. I really hope people overlook my faults.
Oh, honey.
You know, every time I get to the point where I really want to mess with somebody.
Mess with me.
Because it's true. That's what it is. It's like you want to get in their mess and mess them up and, you know, and all that stuff. I have to remember, I have so much more that they can mess up in me and mess with me.
That's true.
Oh, good point. All need to remember that. We need to remember, okay, Jesus, show me what you see. What I think I see.
Because he sees
everybody.
He sees
and
his glory. His prayer was, Father, give them glory as you have given me your glory in John 17. That is what he prayed. And so for us, it is we need to have our eyes open to see his glory.
And boy, I know what you're saying.
It's so
that's
beautiful.
An attack, a lot of times, spiritual attack. You know, they're like,
The lies that the enemy uses.
Deceit.
It's crazy. So Calvin Miller has this amazing quote. Listen to this. It is difficult to look at a naked, beaten man and see anything kingly about him. How odd that in the fullness of time, Herod would be remembered as a tyrant, and yet the naked, beaten man he studied and would rule the hearts of many millions. So Jesus, the one that hung, that he beat and hung on the cross and mocked, would lead millions. And yet Herod, who was proclaiming himself as king, tetrarch, whatever, he's viewed as an evil tyrant in history.
Which he was.
So things aren't as what they seem in our culture. And and so we're going to look today, we're really going to, as we go through, we're going to go through the 1 through 24 again. And can keep in mind everything we talked about the glory and that God's glory appears and that it's revealed, that it can be seen, but yet he does conceal it, because if we're not willing to see him and his revelation, then he's not going to give us that ability. And that it is majestic in his presence, but it all comes back to our willing to want to recognize it. And that means we have to, as a child of God, recognize that we have inherited the glory because we're created in his image. And so having the value of humanness because we are created in the image of God, and therefore his glory is made known. And then as we were talking a minute ago in John 17, how Jesus prayed for the glory to be made known in us as the Father gave him the glory. Keep all of that in mind. Because now, what I want you to think through, we're going to read this, and I want you to be thinking about the mob's mindset. And so, if we get Carrie to read for us the NIV, or whatever, what translation do you have?
ESV.
Okay, perfect. She's going to do the ESV, verses 1 through 24.
Okay. All right. Then the whole company of them arose and brought before him Pilate. And they began to accuse him, saying, "We found this man misleading our nation, forbidding us to give tribute to Caesar, and saying that he himself is Christ, a king." And Pilate asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And he answered him, "You have said so." Then Pilate said to the chief priests and the crowds, "I find no guilt in this man." But they were urgent, saying, "He stirs up the people, teaching throughout all Judea, from Galilee even to this place." When Pilate heard this, he asked whether the man was a Galilean. And when he had learned that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him over to Herod, who was himself in Jerusalem at that time. When Herod saw Jesus, he was very glad, for he had long desired to see him, because he had heard about him and was hoping to see some sign done by him. So he questioned him at some length and made no answer. The chief priests and the scribes stood by, vehemently accusing him. And Herod, with his soldiers, treated him with contempt and mocked him. Then, arraying him in splendid clothing, he sent him back to Pilate. And Herod and Pilate became friends with each other that very day. for before this they had been at enmity with each other. Mm. Pilate then called together the chief priests and the rulers and the people and said to them, "You brought me this man as one who was misleading the people, and after examining him before you, behold, I did not find this man guilty of any of your charges against him. Neither did Herod, for he sent him back to us. Look, nothing deserving death has been done by him. I will therefore punish and release him." But they all cried together, "Away with this man, and release to us Barabbas, a man who had been thrown into prison for an insurrection started in the city and for murder." Pilate addressed them once more, desiring to release Jesus, but they kept shouting, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" A third time he said to them, "Why, what evil has he done? I have found in him no guilt deserving death. I will therefore punish and release him." But they were urgent, demanding with loud cries that he should be crucified, and their voices prevailed. So Pilate decided that their demand should be granted.
Mm. Mm. Oh, I don't like that ending, granted. Mm-hmm. I think when Sandy read it, it was to their will.
To their will, yeah.
Instead of God's will, but granted, mm-hmm. You know. I like the word grant. I named my son.
Yeah, I know.
Maybe that's why I didn't like that.
Yeah.
All right. So essentially here we have the crowd. So describe the crowd for me as you look on this passage. How would you describe the crowd?
Well, insistent, because, you know, they're insistent, they're loud, they're
angry.
Angry.
Yeah. They bring up against Jesus false accusations. Mm-hmm. What are the accusations they bring?
Misleading the people.
Yeah.
You had that written down.
Too. Yeah, that's all right. So thinking through those accusations, I'm going to give you three that according to the new
comment. Didn't pay taxes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so the first one, they said that Jesus was, they called him like a revolutionary. They're saying that mm-hmm. he was perverting the nation. So
right.
Messing with the people, as Carrie was saying. And then as Sandy said, Jesus incited the people not to pay their taxes.
Mm-hmm. And the biggie, he says he is Christ.
Yeah.
You know, and so trying to get him in trouble with Caesar. Mm-hmm. And then the third one, when that didn't work, they decided to say that he was claiming to be king. Mm-hmm. Because he called himself Christ the King, mm-hmm. and trying to really pull against Caesar with that. And so those are the accusations they bring. And so I want you to think, there were announcements that were made in Jesus's life that were good. There were four types of announcements, or what some commentators would call the four evangelists leading up to Christ. Can you guys think of the four announcements that occurred? That proclaimed. So think on his birth. First announcement came to who?
To Mary.
And the second announcement came to, when in a dream, to
Joseph.
Joseph.
Oh, Joseph. Yeah.
Third announcement came to a group of men in the fields.
The shepherds.
Yeah. And then the fourth announcement came through one man.
John the Baptist.
Right. Mm-hmm. So four different times proclamations mm-hmm. were made for Jesus, okay? Mm-hmm. Four different announcements to show who he is. And the fun thing is those were all prophesied in the Old Testament. Mm-hmm. Now, what we have here is we have four judges. This passage only talks about two of them, but the four judges that come against Jesus are Annas, Caiaphas, Pilate, and Herod. So it's kind of crazy mm-hmm. how he has four announcements and four judges happening. And then he has the three accusations that are false. Mm-hmm. And so we have all of this coming in, and it's all coming in from this mob. And this mob is made up of Pharisees, it's made up of Sadducees, and then it's made up of the people that are following behind these religious leaders and just doing what they're doing because
because everybody else is doing it.
Yeah.
We're stupid sheep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, Sandy, you want to share what you had in your Bible study this week?
Oh, we were just talking about sheep and how they get this mob mentality because they're very social. Sheep are, you know, but they always follow one, even whether it might be the wrong way, they're still going to follow because they don't like to be alone and isolated.
And you know, go,
so
we'll walk right off that cliff.
Yeah. Yeah, and they will. Yeah.
Right off that cliff. I'm just going to, yeah, man, you're going, all right, man.
Yeah, and follow me. Yeah.
The sad thing is that sheep will actually beat their head until they die.
Yeah. Like they're just sad.
Yeah. We need to think through this when scripture calls us sheep.
Absolutely. I remember telling my kids, well, if they told you to jump off a cliff, would you follow them and jump off a cliff? They had to think about that for a minute. Maybe not.
In some ways, yes, they will.
Yes.
Depends on what. It's
peer pressure. Peer pressure is mob mentality.
It is totally. Yeah. So I was reading this morning, and the mob mentality, that's something that's, I think the time I really started focusing in on this was Beauty and the Beast. Mm. I don't know why, but it really caught me, and I was bawling the first time I saw Beauty and the Beast. We went to this theater that was one of those that they often use for, was it like an IMAG, where you can have depth perception and stuff.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And so the screen felt like it was right in your face. And somehow seeing that movie done on that screen, it had a different feel to it. You actually felt like you were in the mob. Mm. And I had never, until that point in my life, and I don't even know how long ago Beauty and the Beast was created, but I started weeping because that scene of Kill the Beast is like the perfect animation of a mob and what happens and how people will come in and they draw in and they are a part. And as a little kid growing up, I at one point was in North Carolina for years. My stepdad was in training. And I actually saw a race riot occur, like as it started from the fight of two people and then it get to where it was like, oh my goodness, we need to hide because it's not safe. Mm-hmm. And I've seen the mob mentality at its worst, and it just grieves my heart. And this morning when I was studying this again, I'm like, oh my goodness, look at this. Okay, so one, the first sign is that there's no respect for the ruler. Now, this isn't whether or not the ruler deserves respect. Mm-hmm. A person with a title has respect because of the title.
Correct.
Even if they're not worthy of that respect. So they had no respect for the ruler. They had no desire to hear what the ruler had to say. There was nothing in them that motivated them to even want to listen. So when he says he's innocent, they're like, we have our own
opinion.
And your thoughts don't play a role, even though they're going. They're like, they have an agenda. And until the agenda is done, they're not backing off. Mm-hmm. And the next thing was is that they're loud. Sandy earlier had described them that they were loud, and they're shouting, and they're demanding, and they're commanding. And so in a way, it's like a shout out and a shout down on the leader. So it's, we're going to go so loud that if you don't respond, we're just going to get louder kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so we will manipulate you as the leader to show you we're actually the leader. Mm-hmm. And so, and this is the sad part. It's against justice, even though that justice is what we should be in pursuit of, that they are determined even when it's not just what they're doing. It's not... They would not want it to have it be flipped on them.
Nope.
Mm-mm. And so that determined against justice. The other thing is with this particular mob mentality is that they have their tradition, their way of doing things that they want to preserve. And Beauty and the Beast, you know, that's part of what was happening. You know, it's like, oh, he's going to change our town. It's going to change, you know, whatever, and all this stuff. And so whenever there's a mob mentality, there is something there that they think they're protecting, but they're protecting the wrong thing. And so there does come...
They're blinded.
Right. There does come the start of what could have been an idea for community and communal, but it's the wrong one because it's usually tradition bent instead of justice or for the people. It's more about a concept and idea. And then once they saw a weakness, they will press and keep pressing and pressing to take advantage. And so we have to watch that. And then the last thing is that they will continue using the peer pressure of gathering more and more within that emotion to cause a pressing in to get what they want. And the sad thing is that once we get to the end of this chapter, what we're going to see is that once Jesus dies, Scripture says they walk away mourning. The very thing they wanted ended up being their grief. Like, all of a sudden, the foolishness of what they did, the crowd mourned. Now, what that mourning looks like, is it the mourning of that he died? Is it the mourning of I did this? Is it the mourning of, you know, kind of like, forgive me, I don't mean to lessen this, but shopping remorse? You're on that high of what you're doing, and then all of a sudden the reality of what you just did is a remorse, and so that kind of attitude. And so all of this is going on with this crowd. And I just thought about that. It was like, Jesus really did control his glory. Like, it really is a miracle that he did not just go, you know, I'm here. I'm here to save your soul. What do you think you're doing? You know, it just blows my mind. And then as we get further in, you're just, we're going to see how these things play out. And so thinking through this section of the cross and Pilate and Herod and the religious leaders and the crowd, how they were fueling one another to the point that Pilate was willing to sacrifice an innocent man for his career. Herod was willing to sacrifice an innocent man for mockery. The crowd was willing to sacrifice an innocent man for a murderer. And the religious leaders were willing to sacrifice an innocent man for what they viewed as power. And we already discussed the fact the Sanhedrins die after this. They no longer exist. So it's to their own death even. What does that bring out in you? We got a minute left. That's a lot.
How dangerous that mob mentality can be, no matter where it is. And, you know, we need to stand firm in our belief with Christ and not go along with some of the silliness sometimes that happens.
Right.
Especially those that don't believe. We still have to love them.
Right.
As Jesus says and commands us to do.
Right.
And how deceitful our hearts are.
Yes.
Right?
It's true.
It is.
Those were religious leaders.
Yeah.
They were the ones that should have been fighting for justice. It's like, God, forgive us.
Yeah, no kidding.
And we need to examine our hearts to see, what is our motive?
Motive is always
what
important.
Is the motive of our heart? And because with all of them, for Herod, for Pilate, and for the religious leaders and the crowd, their motives were off.
Yep.
Thanks for listening. God bless.